Morning, today's daf and gittin is Yud Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf as well as Zeich Nishmas Libba Gabriela Bashmuel. We look at the Mishnah in daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. The Mishnah describes two parallel scenarios. One is where the husband hands over a get to his shliach and says, I want you to give this get over to the to my wife. And in the parallel scenario, he hands over his shtar shichur. He has an Eved Kenani, and he's going to free him, and he hands over the shtar shichur over to his shliach, and he says, I want you to take this on behalf of the Eved Kenani. So as we learned yesterday, this is a basic rule that appears again and again throughout Shas, and that is Achon Adam Shelo B'Fanav. That without the person's knowledge, if you want to provide an entitlement, a benefit to somebody, so you may do so even without his knowledge, and he doesn't even have to be the recipient. As long as someone receives it on his behalf, that's enough, that would be fine. So the principle of Zachon La'adam Shelo B'Fanav, which occurs and recurs throughout Shas, is clearly the driving force behind our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that you can do that. You can be Zocha. The problem over here is as follows. When it comes to a wife and her husband, so that so her divorce would be a benefit to her, assuming that the marriage is not working out well. But on the other hand, it's a mixed bag. It's not exactly all good. As a married woman, she's entitled to support. She's contractually entitled to support. The ksuva requirement that the husband either writes or doesn't even have to write it. It would be enforced even without writing it. But the ksuva requirement that a husband has to his wife is that he has to support her. So although the marriage may not be the best marriage, but she's going to be losing support the moment she gets divorced. So it's a mixed bag. So it's not just a zchus. The only time we say zachon la'adam shelo b'fanav is if it's mamash a zchus. But over here, it's not just a zchus, it's a zchus and it's a chova. So we don't say it. Okay, that's clear, that's pasha. What about regarding the Eved Kenani? He's a slave. He's emancipation, freedom for him would be a zchus. So the Mishnah on that point has a machlokis between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. So if you, just quickly, let's take a look back at the Mishnah again. I know we saw the Mishnah yesterday, but it starts really the whole sugya for today. So Hamar Tengez at least Yivishtar Shechur Zelav Dimar Zelach Zor B'Shneim Yachzor Divrei Rav Meir. So Rav Meir says that in both cases, both the husband and a get being delivered to his wife, and a owner regarding the shtar shichur that's being delivered to his Eved Kenani. In both of those cases, the halacha is that it could be chozer. The husband, even though he gave it to somebody to give to his wife, the owner, even though he gave the shtar shichur to give to his Eved Kenani, in both of those cases, he could retract. And the reason why he could retract is because it's not theirs until they actually receive it. Until they actually receive it, it's not theirs, and we don't apply the principle of zachon la'adam shelo b'fanav because it's not only a zchus. Ad kan, that's divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrim begitin hashem avalo b'shichur avadim. As far as the Chachamim are concerned, I agree with you as it relates to a get. A woman getting divorced is not all good. It's good and it's bad, so I agree with you. It's not, the get's not going to belong to her until it actually goes into her hands. But not when it comes to an Eved Kenani. Why? And the Chachamim say, look, there's a basic distinction between a wife and an Eved Kenani in terms of the man's obligation. A man is obligated to support his wife, period. And he never, and at any point in time, can't say to his wife, I'm not feeding you. No, just not doing it. He can't do that. He's contractually bound to do so. So therefore, her divorce to her represents a chova. There's going to be part of the divorce that's going to be to her detriment. She's not going to be supported anymore. Masha Einkin, when it comes to an Eved Kenani, the simple pshat in the Mishnah is that an owner could say to his Eved Kenani, I'm not feeding you. You'll figure it out. How you're going to eat, you'll figure it out. As we mentioned yesterday, sounds a little bit harsh. And when I say a little bit, I'm really being nice.
You're supposed to feed your animals.
Right. So okay. So it's right. It sounds rough, but the simple pshat in the Mishnah is that the owner can say that, and since the owner can say that, so therefore his emancipation for him can only be good. Meaning at this point in time, I'm a slave, and on top of that, I'm not getting that support requirement is not an absolute on the part of my owner. So according to the Chachamim, for him that shtar shechur represents sense only as chus zachla adam shel b'fanav. Amar lahem. So now when Rav Meir considers the position, the chachamim seem to be making such an excellent point. So Rav Meir says in response, Amar lahem v'areu posos avdam and a truma kishem shu posos ishto. Let's say that the owner is a kohen. In the case of a wife, so obviously once there's a divorce, she no longer is entitled to truma. You know, the same thing is true regarding the a slave of a kohen. Slave of a kohen prior to his emancipation was allowed to eat truma. Now that he's freed, he can't eat truma anymore. That's not good. So amr lo mimneshu kinyano. So the answer is yeah, but yeah, that's he's kinyan. He's an acquisition of the kohen, and that makes it different. The Mishnah doesn't really explain fully what the Chacham's response is to Rav Meir. Rav Meir seems to be making a very good point. So at the end of today's daf, probably tomorrow, we're going to go over exactly what that give and take was between Rav Meir and the Chacham. Okay. Yosef Ravuna Rav Yosef Bar Yosef Kamed Rav Yirmiyah V'Yosef Rav Yirmiyah V'Kamen Namnim. So I know we did this yesterday as well, but just as a quick chazara. So the discussion of Amoraim in front of Rav Yirmiyah. Rav Yirmiyah was listening with all but one ear. Okay, he was somewhere between awake and asleep. He was half listening. The Yosef Ravuna V'Kamen Shmaim Namnim Derabban Atofas Abachov Kana. What happened in the Mishnah according to the Chachamim? What happened was is that there's a shliach. We'll call him right now a third party. I know he's a shliach, so it's not really fair to call him a third party, but for our purposes, let's just call him a third party. And what did he do? According to the Chachamim, he took the Shtar Shecher on behalf of the Eved Kenani, and he was Zocha on behalf of the Eved Kenani. In other words, using the principle Zach L'Adam Shlo B'Fanav, so he was Zocha the for the Eved Kenani, the Eved Kenani, meaning he was able to acquire for the Eved Kenani his own body, his own guf. And so Zach Tofes Abachov Kana. And that means as follows. So let's say that Reuven owes Shimon, and I'm a third party, and I know that Reuven owes Shimon, and I take from Reuven on behalf of Shimon. It sounds like it works. So I'm like Rav Yisrael Bar Yosef Afilu B'Makom Shechav L'Acherim. So let me ask you a question. Let's amplify this issue. Let's say Reuven owes Shimon. Fine. And there's no disputing that. And I take from Reuven in order to get to Shimon. But let's say Reuven not only owes Shimon, Reuven also owes Levi as well. Okay, so now what? So now me being the third party, I'm now taking from Reuven for Shimon, which in of itself is good. On the other hand, Levi now, who also had a collectible, he's not going to be able to collect. Because now Shimon took. Now if Shimon himself took, so then obviously that's fine. Shimon's entitled. Shimon is owed. But if Shimon and Levi are both owed, and now it's not Shimon himself who's taking, but now it's a third party who's taking on behalf of Shimon, so that is, the Gemara's Lashon is, the Kona Tofetz Abachov B'Makom Shechav L'Acherim, that I'm now collecting on behalf of somebody who's entitled, who's owed, but at the same time, I'm going to prevent somebody else from being able to collect. Can I do that? I'm a lay-in. So his answer is, so these Amoraim are talking in front of Rav Yirmiyah, so the response was, yeah, I think you could do that as well. Yep. So, Adach Yitarbu Rav Yirmiyah, when Rav Yirmiyah now, who's half listening, hears this, so this woke Rav Yirmiyah up. Amar Lehu Dardiki. Rav Yirmiyah says to them, you're young. He says, no, I know, I have a Kabbalah from Rav Yochanan that if you take on behalf of somebody, for somebody, and again, there's a chov, there's an actual obligation, but at the same time, however, somebody else also has owed money, and you're going to be preventing that other person from getting his money, so lo kana, it's not a kinyan, it simply does not work. You can't do that, says Rav Yirmiyah. I have a Kabbalah from Rav Yochanan. Now, what about our Mishnah? Because our Mishnah seems to be suggesting exactly this. This guy, this middleman, this, again, I'm not going to call him a shliach because that would go against our whole point. This guy, this third party, so he's taking the Shtar Shechor on behalf of the Eved Kenani, even though it represents a loss. Who does it represent a loss for? It represents a loss for the owner. The owner now no longer has him. So that's the Tofetz Abachov B'Makom Shechav L'Acherim. And in our Mishnah, sounds like it works. So why can't you use our Mishnah to disprove Rav Yochanan? So he says, Rav Yirmiyah says to that, I'll say to you very simply. Our Mishnah, when the Mishnah says the word Tenu, it means Zachu. meaning we're going to look at, we're not looking at the third party as an objective third party. He is a shliach. In fact, the owner is saying, "I want you to accept this on behalf of the slave." And under those circumstances, now this guy is no longer just a third party, but it's zoche. He's the owner is saying, "I want you to take this on behalf of so and so." So at that point in time, the Mishnah is totally different than the regular case of a third party coming in and collecting on behalf of somebody. Just a couple points over here. I know I mentioned this Tosfos yesterday. It's such an interesting Tosfos. It should deserve its own shir, its own topic of discussion. Tosfos says that this principle of the Tosfos Abachov Makom Shechav LaAcherim is even when, look at the Tosfos, the first three words of Tosfos. Afilu also shliach. Let's say the person who's owed the money. Let's say he's owed money for Shimon's owed money from Reuven. Shimon wants to collect. Shimon, what does he do? He makes a shliach, right? Not to make this too uncomfortable, but basically, collection agency. Meaning, Shimon says to the third party, look, I'm owed the money. I'm right now, I don't want to spend the time collecting, whatever. You collect on my behalf. I'm appointing you as my shliach. Tosfos says, still we can't do it. In other words, you cannot... You cannot that middleman who even according to Tosfos is a shliach of the person who is owed the money. He can't collect from Reuven in a place where there are other creditors who are owed money. Okay, so that's the simple pshat in Tosfos is that you can't even appoint a collection agency to collect on your behalf. You yourself are the only one who can collect your debt if other people are also owed money. That's the simple pshat in Tosfos. Why should that be? If you think about it, it's hard to understand. It's difficult to understand. If I appoint somebody as a shlich to collect on my behalf, so why can't he? Why can't he collect the on my behalf? In other words, he's a shliach. He's me. He's an extension of me. Okay, that bears analysis, and we're gonna move on to the Gemara. But it's a worthwhile discussion. Okay, going back to the Gemara, Amar Rav Chista, we're like five lines from the bottom of Yud Alef Amud Beis. So the Gemara quotes Rav Chista. Tofas Abachov, Makos Shechav Lachem, Badal Machlokes, Rabbi Lazar VeRabbanan. So what we're going to do now is what Rav Chista is going to do is turn to a Mishnah in Peah, the fourth Perek of Peah, where the Mishnah over there seems to be bearing out this debate as to whether or not I can collect on behalf of somebody, even though others stand to lose. Other people who are also obligated stand to lose. Did not we have a Mishnah? Mishalikit is the pay of Amar Harezel Aploni Ani. Fascinating. Mishnah describes the following scenario. Let's say I go to somebody's field and I go to the corner of the field where a corner of the field is dedicated to the poor. It's called Peah, the mitzvah of Peah. And I'm not a poor person myself, but I'm going to collect on behalf of somebody who's poor. Can I do that? Yes or no? Simple question, straightforward question. Now, I by right have no rights to the produce, but I'm not poor myself. But I'm collecting for somebody who's poor. At the same time as I'm doing that, other poor people obviously now are not going to get the opportunity to take this produce that's on the field. So Rabbi Lazar Omer Zachalov Chachamim Omer Yinen Lani Anim Tzarishon. So Rabbi Lazar says, good, you could do that. According to Rabbi Eliezer of the Mishnah Peah, so I can go to somebody's field and pick produce from the field on behalf of the poor person of my choice. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. The Chachamim say, no, you can't. You have that Peah in your hand, but you have no right to allocate and designate it to whomever you want. Rather, the first poor person you meet, that's the person you're going to have to give it to. But you cannot give it to the person you want to give it to. So what it sounds like over here is that this machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim is now hinging on whether or not, atofes abachav, b'makom shechav l'acherim, whether I can acquire on behalf of somebody when other people stand to lose. Amar ameimar v'itema rav papa dilmalohi. So the Gemara quotes in the name of an Amara, either a Meimar or a Papa, that no, not necessarily. Top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph Ad Kan Lo Kama Rebbe Eliezer Asam Ela Demigudi by Mafkele Lenachse Vahavele Ane Vechazele Umigud Zachle Lenachse Zachle Chavre. Rabbi Eliezer says that only in the case of Peah would it work. But we cannot broadcast this to the rest of Halacha, where Atofes Abachov V'makom Shechav L'Acherim. Why? Because in the case of Peah, I'm not poor right now. Now, I'm not poor, but I could be. it's within the realm of possibility that I could just simply give up all my possessions, because anyway, what do I need them for? I can give away all my possessions, I can become poor, and I can be entitled to pay on myself. So since I have a possible entitlement to the payah, so therefore I could take it on behalf of somebody else. Because it could be that that entitled person could be me, at least theoretically, potentially. Migu. It's possible. So Rabbi Eliezer says, there and only there am I capable of taking on behalf of somebody else. But in the regular case of Tovus HaBachov, I'm not owed the money, and we can't say potentially I could be owed the money. No, I'm not owed the money. Under those circumstances, I can't take on behalf of somebody else if other people stand to lose. And as far as the Chachamim are concerned, so Rav Papa is going to tell you that even the Chachamim may be a localized halacha in the world of Peah, and it may not extend to the rest of halacha. In the world of Peah, so there I can't collect Peah for somebody else. Why not? Gzeiras HaKasav. Because we have a special pasuk that tells us that I cannot do that. The pasuk says, Losalakelani. Now, you look at the pasuk inside, you'll notice that this is not the Pshuto Shel Mikra, this is not the simple Pshat of the Torah, right? The Torah, there really is a comma between the word Losalaket and La'ani. Meaning the Torah is telling us, don't collect. You leave it for the ani. But what we're doing now, b'derech hadrush, is that we are connecting the words lo salakeit la'ani. Don't collect for a poor person. Lo salakeit lo la'ani. So, okay, it's what we call smuchin in the world of making a drasha. So, it's a special gzeiras hakasev in the world of peah that I can't collect for an ani. However, when it comes to other forms of collection, if I want to collect for somebody who's owed, I may do so, even if other people are going to be are not going to be able to collect their obligation. Right. So, just give me 1 second. Avahachalo. Now, Dan, just give me a second. I'll get back to you. Avahachalo. V'Rabbi Lazar, high lo salake my avidlay. Now, according to Rabbi Lazar, who obviously doesn't buy into this drasha, what does he do with the smichas apsukim? Mi ba'ilei lahaz yolani al shalo. Rabbi Lazar says, no. Do you know what the Torah is driving at? What the Torah is driving at is that Anani's a poor person. That doesn't mean he can't own property. He can, but he could still be under the threshold. He could be under the poverty line. And he'll have property. And if he has property, the halacha is, he's got to take a portion of his field and give it to the poor. Meaning, even if you're an ani, you're still required and obligated in the mitzvah of peah. That's what Rabbi Lazar does with the pasuk. Okay, Danny, to your question. Can the ani send a shliach? So, I would suggest that it goes back to the Tosos. Tosos' point earlier. Tosos says that even if the collection agency was appointed as a shliach, meaning, think about the words collection agency. You're an agent. You are a shliach. Even though you are a shliach of the creditor, nevertheless, Tosa says, it still doesn't work. If the halacha of peah and the halacha in general are the same, so then my answer to you would be no, based on the Tosos.
How do we have all of these people collecting?
Right. No. Not only that, the question is excellent, and not only that, but the Gemara elsewhere says that it's one of the highest forms of tzedakah, is when you collect on behalf of somebody else. In other words, so that the giver and the recipient don't know who each other are. So it's right. It's a very good point. Somehow you're going to I guess you could start you. It's a good question. How about this? Let's just leave it as a good question, and we'll take it from there. Okay, to the Gemara Yud Beis Amud Aleph. We are now at the two dots. She'im Yotze Shalola Zone. Okay. The rest of today's daf is all going to be centered and focused around one issue, and that is the following. Again, when it comes to a husband and wife, like we said back in the Mishnah, I'm just going to reiterate that a husband is obligated contractually through the ksuva to support his wife all of his nechasim are meshubad to support his wife. So even if the husband doesn't have any money on hand, no cash on hand, but still, all of his property are there mortgaged against this obligation to support his wife. So a husband has to support his wife. There's nothing to talk about over there. They can come to an agreement, which we'll see later on, and we saw in Ksuvas time and again. They can come to agreement where the wife says to the husband, you keep your mizonos, and I'll keep my masi adayim. Meaning part of the quid pro quo that exists between a husband and wife, as part of the contractual obligation of the ksuva, is that the husband's going to support his wife, which he's obligated to do, and then the wife is going to, all of her earnings are going to go to the husband. But let's say she's doing pretty well, and her earnings are pretty good, and she says to the husband, and they're amenable to this agreement, she says to the husband, I'll keep my earnings, and you keep your food. So they can make some arrangement, but excluding that, with exclusion to that scenario, the husband must support his wife. That's clear. That's postured. That's part of the basic requirement of a ksuva. However, however, when it comes to the owner and his slave, so as we will be discussing for the rest of today's daf, is an owner obligated to support his slave, to provide food for his slave, for his Evakanani? Now, intuitively, the answer should be yes. I'm just speaking now off the daf and trying to intuit a little bit of the Gemara. The answer should be yes, meaning that he's your property, and he's your property, and you have to take care of your property. And as part of taking care of your property, and on top of that, he's a human being as well, and that's well understood, and you have to take care of him. And being that he's under your ownership, and being that he has to work for you, so intuitively, it would make sense that you are required to feed him. That being said, as we're going to see in the Gemara, there's an opinion out there that says that there is no absolute requirement to go and feed your Evakanani. Now, we're not talking morals, now we're not talking ethics. I think it goes without saying, but I'll say it, that morally and ethically, obviously, if you own an Evakanani, you're going to want to feed him. You're going to and besides morals and ethics, just if you want to just speak financially, you know, he'll probably be the most productive to you if you feed him. So from a moral standpoint, an ethical standpoint, from a practical financial standpoint, all indicators would indicate that you should feed him. That probably would be the best from every regard. But again, we're learning Gemara, and from the Gemara's perspective, the question, the issue that we're going to be raising is there an absolute requirement that you must feed your Evakanani? That's what we're going to be discussing from here until the rest of today's daf. And as we're going to see, it's open to debate as to whether or not. Now, if there is no absolute requirement for you to feed him, so allow us to ask a simple question, how is he going to eat? So Rashi says at the beginning of this whole sugya, so what he'll have to do, unfortunately, is he'll have to go knocking door to door. And, yes. Yeah, so, Phil.
The answer was ethically, people are supposed to
the question has been raised. The Gemara is not going to raise that issue. It's a good question, but the question has been raised. If you have to feed your animals, right? Pasuk in Kriyat Shema, you have to feed your animals. So then, why would you have to feed all your possessions, including your avodim? Okay.
Did you pay for his services?
No. Right, correct. That's correct.
So he can't pay for his people.
Right. No,
but even with the animals, the animals you're talking about,
your Evakanani also has to be Shomer Shabbos.
No, but I'm saying in terms of requirement to feed animals, there are certain animals that you're not on Shabbat required to feed. Because they can fend for themselves. So,
the answer has to be yes, meaning there has to be some means in which he's got to feed himself. I'm not saying this because I know I'm right. I'm just, at this point in time, I'm reduced to making what I think is a sensible argument. Okay. All right. Enough time dedicated to the cushioning of the Gemara. Okay. I gave the cushion. Now, after having given the cushion, so now that's it. We got to go through the Gemara. We got to see the discussion inside. So it's hard to cushion this Gemara, but I tried. So Shim Yotzishal Alazim B'Chulei Shamas Meina. So what do you see from our Mishnah? Meaning, really, the truth of the matter is, it's a simple pshat in the Mishnah. It's almost unavoidable. And the Gemara notes Yechla Rav Lamar La'Evet Oseim Iven Izancha. So right, because what was the point of the Mishnah? If I hand my Shtar Shechar over to somebody and I say, give it to my Eved Kanani, what does the Mishnah say? Not according to Rav Meir, but according to the Chachamim. According to the Chachamim, it is. Why? Because Zach La'Adam Shalom B'Fanav. There's no downside to being freed. Why? The Mishnah says there's no downside because the owner doesn't have to feed his slave. The Mishnah says it. So the Gemara just looks at the Mishnah and the Gemara just arrives at what seems to be the right conclusion from the Mishnah. There's no requirement for an owner to feed a slave. So the Gemara says that maybe what our Mishnah is talking about, where there was an arrangement made between the owner and his slave. So the Gemara says, well, wait one second. Meaning, our Mishnah is discussing two parallel scenarios. One is a husband and his wife, and two is an owner and his slave. Okay. Now, in the case of husband and wife, as we've stated, the husband can't shy away from his obligation. So, what are you telling me? You're telling me that the case of the owner and slave is where maybe the owner also can't shy away from this obligation, but there was an arrangement made between the two of them. I'll keep my food, you keep your earnings. Which then kind of begs the question, what's the point of having such a slave? But okay, maybe they made such an arrangement. The Gemara says, well, if that's true, well, you gotta keep the cases now similar. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then a similar arrangement must have been made between husband and wife in the Mishnah, where the husband said to the wife, I'm not feeding you, and the wife has to be agreeable to this. You can't do this without the wife's consent. You said the husband says to his wife, I'm not going to feed you, and you'll keep your earnings. So the Gemara says, now if we're dealing with the same case, so then how did the Mishnah make its point? Am I low? So the Gemara says, Isha b'dalo safka. So the Gemara says, well, the Mishnah scenario is which? That the wife is keeping her earnings, she's not receiving food from her husband, but she's not earning enough. And because she's not earning enough, and because the husband has an absolute requirement to feed his wife, so the husband is required to supplement whatever food she's not making through her earning. So Evanami Bidalo Sipek. So the Gemara says, well, as it relates to the Eved, so maybe we can make the same argument. He is also not earning enough, and the master also has to be supplementing. So the Gemara says, Avda Deneum Karse, Lo Shavi Lamare, Ulamarte, Lamamit Baye. So the Gemara says, yeah, but practically speaking, who's going to want that? Meaning he's an Eved Kanani who can't even earn enough to just to feed himself. If he can't do that, then what would be the point of even having such an Eved Kanani? Gemara basically says it's not fathomable that you would have such an Eved Kanani.
Why did it be comparable? Why?
The Mishnah makes a comparison. The Mishnah puts them side by side. Again, not to create an equation. Just simply to say that the halach is regarding a husband and his wife, it's a chova for her because she's going to lose her support. Regarding an owner and his Eved Kanani, he never was supposed to get supported. The support is not an absolute requirement. Okay, Tashma. Gemara says, come in here. Eved shegala la'ari miklat ein rabo chayev lazona. Okay, this takes us to the third parak of Makos. Although I don't think the Gemara is there. This particular Gemara. Second parak. Okay. Not that it makes a difference in terms of being right, but second parak of Makos talks about being sent into Galos. Person, it was manslaughter. It was he didn't mean to kill the person, but he also wasn't being careful. So the person has to go into the Ari Miklat. So let's say you have an Eved Kanani and inadvertently he killed somebody and he's now going to the Ari Miklat. So the halach is in Rabbi Chayv Lazono. So the owner doesn't have to feed him. And the Velo Odin, and let's go even one step further. El Shamasiya Dovla Rabbo. But furthermore, he works and his earnings go to the Rav. So the Gemara says, Shmamina Yachla Rav Lam Olevet Asayimi Vein Azancha. So what do you see over there? Seems pretty clear that the owner could say to his Eved Kanani, look, I don't have to feed you. Meaning, you're all the way out there in the Ari Miklat. You're not living by me. You're living by me, so obviously you come to my table to eat, but you're not there. I don't have to send you care packages. I don't have to send you food. And for, that's what the Braisa says. And furthermore, the Braisa says is that when the Eved Kanani is working, his earnings are going to be shipped out to the owner. Sounds pretty clear from this Braisa that there is no absolute requirement for the owner to feed his Eved Kanani. So the Gemara says, once again, it could be that the Braisa is dealing with a scenario in which an arrangement was made between owner and slave, where I'll keep my food, you keep your earning. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then why is the Maisi Yadayim being shipped out to the owner if an arrangement was made? So the Gemara's answer is Lahadafa. Well, he made, but he actually is doing pretty well for himself. He's making for his food, and on top of that, there's also a surplus. That surplus is being shipped out to the owner. The Gemara says, "Adafa pshita." So, ma'ud detem mekevin dechel leislei lo yayiv leikiyeslei nami lo lishkol minei kamash malan. So the Gemara says, "Well, as a hava mina, here's what I would have thought. Once an arrangement like this was made, I keep my food, you keep your earnings. So, the Eved Kanani doesn't earn. He doesn't earn." But he's not going to get fed by the owner. In other words, he's going to have to fend for himself. If he earns more than what he needs to eat, the Havamina would have been, okay, if he's ready to suffer the loss, he should also be able to get the gain. And if he's earning a little bit more than what he's eating, let him keep it. That's the Havamina. Kamash Malan, no. This arrangement between owner and Eved Kanani only entitles him to keep that which he needs to eat. But above that, no. Now, when all said and done, a simple question. Why is the construct of this case talking about where he's running away to Nari Mikla? What does that have to do with anything? Because we know that what is the entire purpose of an Ari Miklat? To provide life for the person who's running there. It's a city of refuge. City of refuge so that you can live. The Torah says it. Right? Nasham arotzech v'chai. Okay, I probably did not do a good job quoting the pasuk, but you get the basic idea. It's the purpose of such a city is to provide life for that person. So here, there's now even a stronger hava mina to say that you should, to the best of your ability, you should support him. And if he's earning, and he earns a little bit extra, let him keep it. That's the hava mina. And the chiddush is, of the Braisa, says that no. Because he's an Eved Kanani, and even if an arrangement was made that he's going to keep his earnings to eat, but that's only to eat. Above that, if there's surplus, that's going to go to the owner. But Hamid Diktani says, for the Gemara is not going to leave this Braisa alone. Because the Gemara says, look at the next part of the Braisa. Aval isha shegalta lari mikla balachai b'mizonoseha. The Braisa then goes on to say, let's say a wife, right, a terrible traffic accident, she kills somebody, and now she's running to the Ari Miklat. She's in the Ari Miklat. The next part of the Braisa says, here the husband is obligated to send food to his wife. Because, again, an absolute obligation of the husband to feed his wife. So he's got to send food there. Miklat lo amarla, di amarla bebala, amai chayev. So now, there was no arrangement that was made, because if there was an arrangement made between husband and wife, he wouldn't be feeding her. Clearly, there was no arrangement made between husband and wife. You keep your earnings, I'll keep my food. There was not such an arrangement. And so, umi de sefer de lo amarla, reshanami de lo amarla. So the Gemara says, if there's no arrangement in this case, there's no arrangement in the previous case. Because again, a general assumption that always throughout learning is that the Bryce's cases have to be consistent. So now, the case of the owner and his slave also is talking about a case where there was no arrangement made. I'll keep my food, you keep your earnings. And the Braisa says the owner doesn't have to support his slave. It seems to indicate that there's no requirement. La'olam da'amarlay. So the Gemara says, no, let's go back to what we rejected. Let's say that there was an arrangement made. V'isha b'dalo safka. And there was an arrangement made in the case of owner and slave. There was an arrangement made between husband and wife. Why is the Braisa saying now that the husband has to feed his wife? She's not earning enough. The Gemara says, I'm not going to let this go. Look at the next part of the Braisa. You know, like we're getting the Braisa piecemeal. So like each part of the Braisa toss like seems like, oh wow, look at that. But if we knew the Brisa in its totality, all these questions would be obvious. Look at the next part of the Brisa, where the next part of the Brisa says, and if there was an arrangement made between husband and wife, what is that telling you? That up till that point in the Brisa, there was no arrangement made. Mechlal deresha delo amrla. Hachi kamer, the Gemara says, well, here's how we could read the Brisa. The im misapekes, the amar la, tzimasi adech, b'mazanasecha rashai. So the Gemara says that the third part of the Brisa is not introducing an arrangement. There always was an arrangement. The third part of the Brisa is just simply telling us that if she's earning enough, so then the husband doesn't have to send her food. To which the Gemara now says, is that really a chiddush? That's obvious. Misapekes ma'la meimra, ma'u detema kol kvoda baz melech penima kamash malan. The Gemara says, here's the havamina, and this is what the Brisa is coming to teach us. Here's what I would have thought. She's not in her hometown, right? She's now in an ir miklat. And by the way, just as an obvious observation, the husband's not there with her. Right? We know classically, you know, you hear it all the time. It's a Gemara Makos, said that the Rebbe goes into the Talmud goes into Ari Mikla, the Rebbe's got to go with the Talmud. Right? It seems pretty clear from this Gemara over here, husband doesn't have to go with his wife to the Ari Mikla. Okay. I just say that by way of observation. It seems to be that way. Anyway, the Havamina would have been she's not home. She's in a strange town. This is Rashi, by the way. I'm just paraphrasing Rashi. She's in a strange town. And now what? Even though there was an arrangement made between husband and wife, I keep my earnings, you keep your food. But there, I can make a stronger argument that's true if she's in her hometown. She knows people. She'll create employment opportunities without there being a breach of tznius. But here in the Ari Miklat, for her now to go to work, she's going to have to go out. There's strange people around. She doesn't know anybody. It would be a breach of tznius. It is a breach of tznius. And and maybe this breach of tznius is enough of an argument to say to the husband, I know you arranged that you're not going to support her, but in the era miklat, you're going to support her. That's the havamina. So the kamash malan is that no. That once they made such an arrangement, even though she's in the strange year miklat, she's going to have to go to work and she's going to have to support herself. Lema kitanai. Okay, so after having gone through the whole brisa, we're still basically at an impasse in terms of whether we could see clearly from a mishnah, from a brisa, whether or not an owner can withhold food from his eved kenani. So the Gemara now suggests maybe this is really a machlokes atanayim. It's years of famine. There's not a lot of food. E parnaseni, oh, it's the ein lecheres. So according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel of this brisa, there's a paucity of food, and the slave could say to his owner, "Here are your options. You're either going to feed me or you're going to free me." That's it. And according to Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, that is an ultimatum that the slave could say to his master. The Chachamim Amarim, Harishus Biad Rabbo, Harishus Biad Rabbo. And the Chachamim say, no ultimatum needs to be made to the owner. The owner at this point in time could just basically say, look, I'm really sorry, but you'll figure it out. So my So the Gemara says, what is it at the root of the debate between Rosh Hashanah Gamliel and the Chachamim? So maybe our very issue of whether or not an owner can say to his Eved Kenani, I don't have to feed you. So the Gemara says, V'tizbara hai o parnaseni, o tzel lecheros o parnaseni, o tein li masi adai beparnasesi, mi ba'ilei. So the Gemara says, well, wait one second. If we're right, question number one, I didn't understand the ultimatum. Shouldn't the ultimatum be either you're going to feed me, or I'll work and you're not going to take my earning because I'm entitled to be fed? Shouldn't that be the ultimatum? And furthermore, va'od ma'ishna b'shei betzaros. And if the whole point of the brisa is just to instruct us as to whether or not an owner is or is not obligated to feed his slave, so why are we talking about years of famine? He could make the point, the same exact point, without having to introduce this idea that there's a famine. So Allah Akbar Maiskin and Darmalok see Masi Adekla Mazona Secha. So the Gemara says that the case in the Brisa is where there was an arrangement made between owner and slave. I keep my earnings, sorry. I keep my food, you keep your earnings. Now, under normal years, fine that such an arrangement was made. But over here, it's Shnei Betzara, so now it's just simply not enough resource. There's not enough food. Now we understand. So according to Rosh Hashanah Ben Gamliel, now the ultimatum is as follows. It's either you feed me, even though we made the arrangement that you're not going to feed me, but it's years of famine. There's just simply not enough. So either you're going to feed me, or so you let me go. Why? Because right now, where am I getting my food from? So obviously, I can't earn enough for myself. It's just simply not enough food, and we made the arrangement that you're not going to feed me, so you don't have to feed me. But I got to go somewhere to go eat. So obviously, I'm going to go knocking door to door. I'll go knocking door to door. Who's going to want to give a slave food? As stucca, it's not going to work out for me. So basically, in the current state that I'm in right now, and because of the condition of famine, right now this is just simply a untenable situation. And the Chacham's counter argument is, look, obviously the situation is not good. It's not going to get better if I free you. In other words, you're going to go knocking door to door. The people who are ready to give are ready to give. In general, I think we find that in life, that the givers give, and the people who don't give, don't give. And your status of being an Eved Kanani versus being a free man is not going to really make a difference in terms of your own personal situation. So look, it's not an optimal situation, and it's a terrible situation, but freeing you is not going to change anything. That's the Chachamim's counter-argument. Tashma. The Amar Rav Hamaktish Yide Avdo Oso Aved Love Ochel Vose Upareya. Let's say the owner sanctifies the hands of his Eved Kanani. Anything that my Eved Kanani makes is going to belong to Hekdesh. Okay? It's the Davish Lobal Olam, but what's going on the Yadayim? You know, the classic discussion that normally takes place over here, but right now we're focusing on one aspect, and that is the husband. The owner's ability to, or his right to, not have to feed his Eved Kanani. Is that true or is that not true? So here, in this Braisa, and it's not a Braisa, it's a statement by Rav. It's a statement by Rav. That if a owner sanctifies the hands of his Eved Kanani, so what's the Eved Kanani going to do? So the Amakashi de Avda also Eved Lover. So what he'll do is he'll borrow in order so that he can eat. And how is he going to pay back? He'll work in order to pay back. Now that part's a little bit tricky because anything that he produces is going to belong to Hekdesh. Okay, and we're going to get to that point in just a moment. But in the meantime, however, Shmamina Yachol Harav Lomar Leved Asemini Veinazancha. So, but aside from all that, we'll come back to the question in just a moment. Sounds like the master has a right to say, I'm not feeding you. So the Gemara says, Hacha by my skin, by my lomazonos. So the Gemara says, well, no. Maybe the case in question over here is where the owner is feeding his slave. So the Gemara says, if that's true, lamai lovev ochel. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so what is he doing? Borrowing to eat more. His owner's feeding him. So the Gemara says, la dafa. So the Gemara says, well, he's eating, but he'd like to eat some more. So the Gemara says, "Velema le hektesh an hashas agale below adafa, v'hashanami tiskele below adafa." So the Gemara says, "Well, at this point in time now, hektesh is going to worry about its bottom line." Hektesh is saying to the slave, "I'm not following right now. You have an owner. He's feeding you." And meanwhile, you're taking on more money, right? More into the expense account, onto the expense line of the budget. So that what? Meaning your owner is feeding you. Why are you taking on more expense so that you can so that you can eat more? What's going on over here? And obviously, more to the expense takes out more profit from us. So why can't Hekdesh say that to the slave? So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says Tiska le below Adafa Hekdesh Gufe Nichalei Ki Hekdesh Delishvech Avde. So the Gemara's answer is no. what's it called? The little analysis over here. Cost-benefit analysis. Yes, it's true that he's taking on a little bit of expense, but with that little bit of extra expense, there's going to be he's going to be stronger, he's going to be better, he's going to produce more, and so therefore it will work out for Hektish's bottom line. Osei uporeya. Now, in terms of paying back the debt that he incurred, so what does he do? He'll work in order to pay back the debt. Gemara's question, the obvious question, kama kadishle. So the Gemara says, isn't every time he works, isn't he going to be? Isn't he going to? It doesn't belong to Hektish. How can he take that money in order to pay back his creditors? So the Gemara says, well, what he does is that he works and earns incrementally so that it's not subject to belonging to Hektesh. He's earning at a clip of less than Shava Pruta. So the Gemara says, it makes sense. Rav says that if you're makdish the hands of your Eved, so that Eved will do in order so that it'll eat. Because otherwise, how can who's going to work for him? So the Gemara says, isn't the general assumption over here is that the husband is not feeding him. So the Gemara says that it seems that Rav's position is that that in a situation where the owner does make an agreement with him. Under those circumstances, he's going to have to fend for himself. But without the arrangement, without the agreement, so the owner does in fact have to support his Eved Kanani. Okay, so at this point in time, Rav is of the opinion that an owner does have to feed his Eved Kanani, and he cannot walk away from that. Tashma, Amar Rav Yochanan. Now, on the other hand, so we have the opinion of Rav. Now, let's quickly take a look at Rav Yochanan's viewpoint. Now, Kotel Yad Avdo Shel Chavero. Okay, you cut off the hand of your neighbor's Eved Kanani. Okay, in general, we know. When you do bodily damage to somebody, it's the eighth parak of Baba Kama. So there are five payments that you need to make. So, no saying shift over Rufasol Rabo, the also Eved Nizam in Staka. So, Shevis, Rufua, disability, and medical bills are going to be given over to the owner, and that Eved is going to have to get supported by Staka. Shma mina yachol Rav, lamar l'Eved, osei mi ve'in izancha. Now, why is it going to the owner? Because the owner doesn't have to feed his Eved Kanani. That is Rav Yochanan's opinion. So, how come am I skinning by ma'alo mezonos? So the Gemara says, well, no. No, we're talking about a case where the owner is actually feeding his Eved Kanani. So then if that's true, so then what's he doing? Knocking door to door. La'adaf. But the Gemara says, once again, a surplus. Meaning, not surplus. He wants to eat a little bit extra. And by the way, understandably, he's recovering from a serious injury. So he nizam is parnas me ba'ilai. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then the word nizon min tzedaka seems to be misplaced. Nizon gives us the indication that he's getting his basic food ration. That's not true. The basic food ration is coming from his owner. The additional is coming from tzedaka. El alav shmamina yachol shmamina. So Rav Yochanan's position is that the owner doesn't have to feed his Eved Kanani. Okay, so where do we stand right now? What comes out interesting is that we have a basic machlokes between Rav and Rav Yochanan. The issue that we've been dealing with since the beginning, almost the beginning of today's daf, is whether or not an owner can say to his Eved Kanani, I'm not going to feed you. Whether he has a right to just simply opt out from feeding his Eved Kanani. So to that, we quoted a number of brises that touched on this topic. And after all said and done, it comes out to be a machlokus between Rav and Rav Yochanan. Rav's of the opinion that the owner must feed his Eved Kanani and cannot bow out of that obligation. And Rav Yochanan says that he does not need to. Let's just do one more point for today, and then tomorrow we'll pick it up. So Allah Shmamina Yachush Mamina. Amar no sin shifta refusal the rabbo. So shifta pshita. So the Gemara says now in terms of disability that goes to the owner. Now that makes sense because it's the owner's loss, meaning he can't work right now. So the owner is really suffering the financial loss of disability. Gemara says that's obvious. What's the point? So the Gemara says, now think about it. The medical bills, so that you give to the owner. Give to the owner. He's not the one who was injured. He's not the one who's not the one who needs to get healed. The medical expense should go to the owner. Should go to the actual injured so that he can heal. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, I'll give you a scenario in which the owner can actually collect some of the. Some of the medical expenses. This is, again, another touchy issue for today, but this is basically billing. Let's say that a particular treatment was diagnosed for this for his injury, and the typical treatment, in other words, the normal billing is that it's a five-day treatment. So it was generally billed as a five-day expense. However, in this particular case, they went after a slightly aggressive treatment, and basically he was able to heal in 3 days. So now there's a little bit of surplus. It's interesting, by the way. It's, again, its own discussion. Why doesn't the surplus just simply go back to the... To the person who had to pay. Okay, that in of itself is interesting. That's the Gemara doesn't entertain that, but in other words, it's basically a windfall. But a windfall to whom? That's the chiddush. The chiddush is that it's not going to be a windfall for the slave. It's going to be a windfall for his owner. That's what the Braisa means when Rav Yochanan means when Rav Yochanan says that the medical is going to go to the owner. Obviously, the medical is going to go to the slave in order so that he gets healed. But if there's such a scenario where there would be a windfall, so that goes to the owner. Okay, Adkan, that is the that's the end of the discussion. So, in terms of the question of whether or not an owner cannot have to pay his evikanani, so what comes out is after an entire day of discussion within the daf, turns into a machlokas between Rav and Rav Yochanan, and whether or not, generally speaking, who does the halacha fall like between Rav and Rav Yochanan? Yeah, generally. I didn't look up the Rambam. You're not going to find this in Shulchan Aruch. But I didn't look up the Rambam. Okay, I take... Again, that goes back to our first point. In other words, I can understand that...
And it says that you're showing me that Rabbi Yochanan himself, he actually fed his slaves and he won't pay for the...
Okay. For those who didn't hear, Ben pointed out that the Yerushalmi says, I didn't see this. The Yerushalmi says that the Rav Yochanan owned slaves and he fed them himself. So, in other words, again, we're just talking about the baseline halacha, but obviously the moral ethical issue, and also the productivity issue, meaning obviously it. You know, it's correct. Okay, but I put that all on the front end. Okay, we put it on the back end as well.